Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome again in Circles of Change, and it's a real pleasure always, and in particular when I can go global. And we're speaking with Subroto Bagchi, who's from Mindtree Corporation from Bangalore, India. Good morning, Subroto. How are you today?
Good morning, Zara. I'm wonderful. I'm in California, sunny and beautiful.
That's right.
And I believe you have a nice weather there as well.
We always do. We always do. Well, let me introduce Subroto, who is best known for being co-founder of Mindtree in 1999, where he started as chief operating officer. Those who don't know, those of us in the tech center know very well, though, Mindtree is among India's most admired companies that works across industries, providing information technology, research and development consulting around the world. 3 years ago, Subroto took on the role of gardener at Mindtree. I love that metaphor, where he is now also vice chairman, meaning he's spending one-on-one time with the top 100 leaders in their personal professional space, expanding leadership capacity to ready Mindtree to step into the $1 billion company league. In addition, Subroto works at the grassroots level by making himself available to their 45 communities of practice that foster organizational learning, innovation, and volunteerism within the organization. An interesting concept. He's on the board of governors of the Indian Institute of Management in Bangalore, and he's written extensively in leading newspapers and magazines, and has spoken at industry platforms and educational institutions around the world. He's authored three best-selling books: The High Performance Entrepreneur, the second is Go Kiss the World, and our topic today, The Professionalism, Defining the New Standard of Excellence at Work. He is India's number one business author. So again, I'm a real fan because I had the opportunity to connect with Mindtree probably around year 2000, so it's been a while. But to see your career circling out now in such a broad way to become a gardener, tell us about that title.
Well, you know, what happened was we started the company, you would remember, in 1999 with 10 co-founders, some from the United States, some from India. And, you know, the whole dream was to build a next-generation IT services company. And about 3-4 years back, we sat down together and say, how do we prepare the company for the next 10 years? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it occurred to us that we need to really bring up the next 100 people and hand the company over to the next generation. You know, when we started the company, we had an understanding among the 10 co-founders that our children will not inherit the company. Mm-hmm. It will be a professionals company. So that meant that we really had to create a passage into the future and bring the next level up. And then it occurred to me in particular that you don't build leadership capacity by sending people to training programs. Yeah, and Zara, you will agree to this more than anybody else. It's a deeply individual, deeply personal, professional thing. And what needs to happen is people need to be in touch with the inner self, so to speak, and create capacity within themselves. And when people create individual capacity, the organizational capacity gets created. So it's a very one-to-one thing. And then I said, let me volunteer and do this work. So then we, you know, stepped back and said, what do we call this, you know, whoever is this person? Mm-hmm. What do we call this role? And since we have Mindtree, we said, why not call this guy gardener? Because it's got interesting connotations. One, the trees don't line up at the gardener's corner office. The gardener goes every morning to where the trees are.
Yes.
Every tree is unique. No trees are alike. You know, the apple tree's nutritional and pruning requirements are very different from those of the rose bush. So each one is very different. And then we also wanted to underscore that if you want to grow up professionally beyond a point, your title doesn't make you who you are. You make the title what it is. And beyond a point, your own individual growth only can come not by reward and recognition and that kind of stuff, but by your capacity to serve other people. A gardener serves.
Absolutely. And that, in fact, is something that's deep internally, that in your role as gardener, you're helping people foster then in a more external way.
Yes.
Well, your book, this the one that we've got now, was written in 2009, so I'm convinced that I've been under a rock for the last 2 years, that I had not heard of it until recently, so but yet I read this book as if this was an old friend. In other words, the precepts that you had, and I told you in a note that I fired off to you this week, is no sooner did I highlight something and put my highlighter down to go to the next chapter than bingo, I was picking up my highlighter again. So, you know, the amount of time, of course, obviously I'm not yet Kindle ready if I'm still walking around with pencils and highlighters and the like, but the wisdom that you share in here and the broad cross-section of thoughts obviously is a collection of your own life experiences, and I just love some of the real frank conversation you've had with yourself in the course of this book. Is it not true?
Yes, and you know, first of all, thank you so much. You've been very, very kind. And going back to being under the rock, you weren't under the rock at all. The book first made its debut in 2009 in India, where it became the number one business bestseller. And then one day, to my surprise, I heard from the publishers, Penguin, that they would like to launch an international edition from the United States. And that has happened only, the book has come out in the U.S. only about 4 or 5 weeks back. So, it had to prove itself to come here. That was a pleasant surprise because I said, you know, United States, I personally deeply admire as a country of professionals. And I said, what is there for folks in U.S. to really learn from my book? But lo and behold, it looks like, you know, it is a universal issue. It is something that needs to be told and retold. And I'm very pleased that along with the international edition here, 2 Chinese editions are also coming up. So looks like, you know, the subject is here to stay, and the subject is never going to get out of fashion. Coming to your point about my personal life, you know, the fascinating thing is I look at my own life as the capacity to behold, as against just the capacity to look at myself. And when you build the capacity to behold, you look around, the world is so fascinating. And one of the great things about living in a global community is that, you know, I'm in a plane every other day, and I come to U.S., I go to England, I go to Japan. I look at professionals across the spectrum. So this book is not so much about me as much as great learnings from, you know, professionals across the world, across spectrum. So if you look at the book, you meet a guy called, Perrin Curtis, who's a bus driver in Philadelphia. And then you meet a grave digger in Bangalore, a taxi driver, and a, you know, cardiac surgeon, and a software engineer, and a cop, and of course, people in the world of sports and art and literature and everything else.
Well, and you're absolutely right. That term professional evokes a lot of things. To some people, that might mean, well, they went to professional university. But the much, much broader context, that this is the person that you know, you drop your car off to get washed at the car wash, and you know you're going to get the job done way beyond your expectation, and they'll do the extra little buff on the instrument cluster, right?
Yes, and they will ask you, how has your day been so far?
Yeah, that's right.
And they know, you know, beyond just serving you, they have what in this book I'm calling affective regard, you know. Mm-hmm. And you, Zara, you exemplify that, you know. To be a professional, you need to have affection and respect for the work you do. It goes well beyond customer sat and stuff like that. And that's why when I was researching for this book, I was so surprised that this term actually goes back 1,000 years.
Right.
And it begins with the Latin term professio, which means that you profess, and that profess is as in entering a religious order. So our vocation, our profession, is a means to serve and to sustain over a lifetime. It's not just a matter of, you know, getting paid for something. It's not just about employment.
Right, and this makes it all the more important that the pursuits that we throw our heart and soul and mind and time into, thus resonate into something that comes with us with natural gifts and grace, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Be able to be a consummate professional, this can't be something that's so hard to do. It's got to come with so much joy. And it goes back to, you know, your chapters that really talk about this element of knowing who you are.
Yes, self-awareness is so important, particularly in a world of contradictions, particularly in a world where we are being torn apart. You know, I talk about this in fair amount of detail in the book, because I have watched professionals at close quarters, and I find that self-awareness is the difference between being professionally qualified and competent and being professionally, you know, professionally being impactful, professionally being beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of professionally qualified people are there, but they're not necessarily self-aware. And most professional failures take place, particularly in the lives of high achievers, when they lose self-awareness.
Absolutely. And they don't understand the swirl that they're creating around themselves. I might call it from the Peanuts comic strip, the pig pen effect.
Yep.
You know, and boy, if you can be the cosmic professional and actually have the environment become healthier, happier, or higher charged in a positive way because you are there, that's the sign.
Absolutely.
Well, I would comment, by the way, for me, and thank you for clarifying that I haven't been living underneath a rock, but to read your book from the perspective of, indeed, you being an international author and a colleague from around the globe in India, and seeing the types of references and examples you pulled upon, it was an important cross-cultural business learning experience for me, as opposed to the preponderance of wonderful books that come here out of the United States or even Europe, that the way you touch into your own culture in India, that of course more and more people are being mindful of the economic engine, cultural engine, international agenda engine coming from your native land, that this is an important piece in that regard, to see just even your word choice was a wonderful eye-opener for me, and I think you're leading the pack in that regard. And I may even start saying, okay, what other international business authors should I be picking up on in the process?
Well, you know, very interestingly, if you look at the world of business authoring, not much has happened in my country. It's a very, very recent thing. Business authors have predominantly come from the United States, because I think the U.S. is so heavily invested intellectually. Look at the first of all generous amount of infrastructure that has been created in the U.S. Whether you look at the MIT, you look at Stanford, you've been yourself associated with a number of educational
mm-hmm.
institutions,
right,
including the Babson College, for example, which is so dedicated to studying the world of entrepreneurship. I'm sorry?
Yes, indeed, and entrepreneurship. And what does that term even mean in this day and age? It's so much broader when you tap into, you know, your use of the word service, the whole social entrepreneurship piece,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just the, you know, the economic capitalism side of it.
Yes, that's certainly a very powerful phenomenon that we will see making its impact way beyond what we have experienced in the last 10 years. But going back to your question about who else should you be reading, from my part of the world, very little business literature has come, but that's hopefully going to change over time, because as you alluded to in a little while ago, that there is a new economic momentum, and India is making a transition from being a developing country into a developed country in the next one decade, which will see a lot more content being generated. For now, people like me, we continue to look at the business literature and other writings that emanate either from the U.S. or Europe in a very big way.
Well, the other delightful part I feel about your book, and I had mentioned this also to you in an email, is that this is going to be required reading for my younger clients, for those who are, you know, brought up in this as digital natives, you know, that are working off all their different mobile devices, which I'm indeed impressed with, and I love to tap them because they can get me the content fast. But do they know how to talk to one another sitting side by side? Or even those of us that carry those devices, are we losing the ability to do that high touch connection with people you know, in that mission of serving others. So I believe there's so many precepts in your book that remind us about things like showing up on time, returning a call when you make a commitment, that it, you can never not get enough of those rules of the road.
Yes. In fact, you know, early in my professional career, I heard the term commitment to commitment. Now, if I tell you that I'm going to finish a piece and send it across to you, I do it. I do it a little before time and do it a little better than what you had expected, what the brief was all about. If I say I'm going to show up, I show up a little before time. Look at the number of mails that you sent to me, and this is the last radio talk of the season that I must tell you that that I'm doing, and the number of mails that preceded this 34-minute conversation is just amazing. This is the 18th or 19th radio talk that I'm doing in the course of the last 6 weeks promoting my book. And so commitment to commitment is huge. It's big. And commitment to commitment is one thing. The other is what you talk about the Gen Y, for example, the digital generation. I think the thing to for them to really cultivate is inclusion. And they are they're inclusive in a very interesting way, in a digital way. But inclusion has to be way beyond that. Inclusion has to impact people twice, thrice, four times removed from you. And that must happen in a physical world.
Yes, within an eyeball-to-eyeball and not just voice-to-voice way, too, which is a challenge.
Heart-to-heart.
Yes, and heart-to-heart. Very well said, the heart-to-heart piece. And I think that whole world of inclusion, people sometimes jump to the conclusion that it was about I was excluded, when indeed really what was going on is the individual didn't know the power of including.
Yes. And this is, you know, going to be the new language of business. And this is the pervasive theme of being a professional. I may be a doctor, a software engineer, I may be a cop, I may be a bus driver, like, you know, Curtis Perrin. It's all about inclusion. You know, when I include, my world expands. When I exclude, my world contracts.
Yes, very well put. You know, I mentioned in the introduction now that you're spending your time, a good portion of it, on this one-on-one time with your top 100 leaders, and you called it the personal professional space. You know, to some people, at least all, maybe this is Western, that gets a little bit uncomfortable about, well, gee, should I be divulging my personal dreams, my avocations, all those funky hobbies that I try to find time to do? And for those of us that see and want to see individuals in our organizations as holistic, we can't help but look to evoke that out in the conversation, can we?
Yes, absolutely. I personally believe, and it might be counterintuitive in a limited Western sense, that there is a Chinese wall between a personal and professional consciousness. It is seldom like that. If you look at, let's say, on Enron, and, you know, failures in high places, were these professional failures, or were the failures at some level personal failures? You know, if you look at people, our capacity to include, our capacity to be self-aware, our capacity to even take risks at an organizational level, they are seeded in deeply personal experiences. So it's a wrong notion, it's a misnomer, that when I'm a professional, I'm sans emotions, I'm sans feelings, I leave it at the door when I enter the workspace. Now, that was a very mechanistic, very assembly line, very 19th and 20th century principle. If you look at the way neuroscience and psychology and imaging are all coming together, and we're beginning to understand how the brain works, we are going to see increasingly that, you know, there is a really porosity between the personal life and the professional life of an individual. And I think the next generation is coming to terms with that in a very sociological sense. you know, I'm so open that, you know, I'm on Facebook, you can research me on Google. The idea of privacy for the current generation will be very different from the last generation. So my take is that in the future, when Gen Y takes over, they will actually understand the limitation of thinking that your personal life and professional life are, you know, are sacrosanct in compartments. That's not going to be.
In fact, I like that use of that word, personal and professional porosity. The point being is, by the way, that I want my professional world to be a reflection of who I am, what I stand for, what I believe. This whole idea of being instead of just the doing bit of it. And so for that regard, you know, that I'm in a snappy, happy, jumping place probably is also a manifestation of how I walk out the door in my 5-to-9 life as opposed to just my 9-to-5 life.
You know, I look at leaders all the time in my own organization and outside, and I tell myself, you can't be a first-rate CEO and a third-rate spouse.
Terrific. Yep,
that is not a sustainable model at all.
And in fact, you see people that are stepping into Act Two, whether that mean they're going to retire and work part-time or start a new thing, and you hear them evoking things like, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to go back now and become the kind of father, et cetera, or mother. And bingo, you realize you've lost all that time.
Absolutely. You know, why not start it at 30? Why not start it at 28? Why do you have to go all the way near your grave and say, oh, my family is important, family values are important, and people are important? The future of work and living is an intertwined future.
It does, though, bring a challenge, would you not agree, to those who have grown up under a certain leadership model and done so successfully that now they're being expected to adopt really authentically this idea that their role is to serve others, or like you, to now in your very senior capacity with your 10 partners and co-founders, now to take a different seat and know that it is not about being perhaps at the head of the ship, but rather helping those who are turning the tiller at the back of the ship.
Yes, it is a challenge, but I think we live in hope as entrepreneurs. You know, we are in the hope business.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is to send a message. Our job is to share the story. And our job is to innately believe that the human brain is plastic, it is capable of molding itself, and that people will look around, people will listen, people will change. Some people will not, and they will fall off, but that is how Mother Nature is.
Well, and in fact, you'd go to that gardening and that tree analogy, and that's when it's time that the leaves fall off or you need to prune the branches, right? I mean, that is part of that discerning process and responsibility as a leader. So the professional, defining the new standard of excellence at work, it's been out since 2009 in India, and yet to know, are you getting different reactions or chapters popping up with more questions vis-a-vis when the book first came out as with now this release?
Well, this release is new and different in many, many ways because 2 years was good enough time for me to also think about how it can be more nuanced for a far more global readership
mm-hmm,
profile.
Mm-hmm.
Book's been out about 6 or 7 weeks, and the most of the reviews which have come have been trade reviews and reviews from the publishing circle, and those have been very, very encouraging. I would really like to hear from readers what they think, and I hope they will buy a copy, read, and they can go to my website, which is mindtree.com/Subrato Bakhchi. That's my blog, and I'd be very happy to hear the thoughts and views and include some of those in the next edition of the book.
There you go. So you're already planning the what next?
Well, I hope so. I hope so, Zara, because the word needs to continue, isn't it?
It does indeed. Well, thank you, Subrato Bakhchi, who's gardener and vice chairman for Mindtree Limited. Again, his book, this is the third book, The Professional, Defining the New Standard of Excellence at Work. We'll look forward to mapping the progress of this wonderful piece. And like I said, for those of you who pick up the book, have your highlighter near you. You're not going to stop wanding it across the pages. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a delightful afternoon in California.
Thanks, Zara, and see you soon in Tucson.
Yeah, indeed. We'll meet up soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible.
The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.